You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
If you've struggled with mental health issues, or if you care about someone who has, then you'll want to hear what our guest on this episode, Terry Chaney, has to say. You may know Terry from her New York Times bestselling book, Manic, a Memoir, which depicted her life as an elite entertainment attorney suffering from bipolar disorder.
Terry's new book is called Modern Madness, an Owner's Manual. It explores the struggles, stigmas, relationship dilemmas, treatments, and recovery techniques Terry and others have experienced in coping with mental health issues. Terry, we thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us more about your new book, Modern Madness, and why you feel people really need a book like this right now.
Well, I think that COVID-19 has launched a second epidemic, which is the epidemic of mental health, which has been going on for a while, but is just so much worse than it ever was. Calls to audio and video centers went up 1,000% in the first few months of lockdown, and it's predicted there are going to be an additional 150,000 deaths of despair from coronavirus. So this is just the time to talk about these issues. People are experiencing depression and anxiety in a way they never really have before.
And tell us more about your book and how that plays into this.
Well, my book is a combination of my own personal experience with mental illness, particularly bipolar disorder, and the scientific research into mental illness. So I combined them because I wanted to give a full picture of both the inside and the outside of mental illness. And I organized it like an owner's manual because a few years ago I bought a new vacuum and it had all these bizarre and scary attachments and I couldn't figure out where they went. And I was thumbing through the owner's manual and I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was an owner's manual for mental health, because it's so complicated and frightening for most people. And that just gave me the idea to organize my personal stories into sections like troubleshooting, warranties, maintenance, instructions for use. And that is pretty much the summary of the book. It's mental health inside and outside.
Terry, I just really have to applaud you for doing such justice to mental health issues, because I've suffered with depression for years. And one of the most frustrating things for me has been not being able to describe to people who I really care about and who I know care about me exactly what I'm feeling. And I think you just do a great job explaining it. And like you said, you know, sometimes it just kind of hurts and it's torturous. So can you describe to us, to our audience who maybe hasn't read it yet, a little bit more about how that feels?
Well, depression is particularly physical. People don't understand that. It's not all in your head. There's something called psychomotor retardation. That means your body is almost paralyzed and your will is paralyzed. It's very difficult to move. Let's say I wanted to pick up this pen that's sitting next to me on the desk. I would have to stare at it and finally move my hand and move it over to the pen. It just becomes, the simplest motion becomes so difficult. And that is not just physical. It's also thoughts become difficult. They get stuck and you feel like you're weighed down by 1,000 pounds. So it's, depression is a heartbreaking disease that I think, unfortunately, more and more people are becoming familiar with through COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. And how has your bipolar disorder been affected by COVID-19 in ways you wouldn't have expected?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't expect that I would do as well as I have done. I think maybe because I'm used to isolation, I'm a writer, I'm single. It hasn't been a huge change. I know for many people with mental illness, the isolation has been a trigger for increasing or worsening their symptoms. But I hear from a lot of readers that that's not the case, that in a way, it's almost like we've developed antibodies to depression. I mean, we have gone through such hell in our lives that this is not as hard as it is for other people. So there's that unusual split that I didn't expect.
What are some of the signs and symptoms that we should look out for if we care about someone who we think might be really struggling with mental health issues right now during the pandemic?
Well, normally the answer to that question would be watch out if they're isolating. But now, of course, you can't tell. So that's a real shame because it was a very useful measure of mental illness. But I would say look at their sleep patterns, their speech patterns. Their sleep is generally going to suffer if they're experiencing an episode of mental illness. Their speech, if they're manic, for example, may become very, very rapid and not make a whole lot of sense sometimes, just jumping from idea to idea. Or if you're depressed, you experience that slowing down process I was talking about before. So changes in eating habits, you might eat more than usual, or you might eat less than usual, depending on what type of depression you have. But the most important thing is really to observe without, observe without judging. So that a person with mental illness doesn't like to feel like they're being watched all the time. But you do need to keep a close eye on anyone who, for example, is suicidal or has expressed hopelessness, despair. You have to take those things very, very seriously, even if it's said in a joking manner. You need to investigate further.
You've said that the five words that family and friends should ask are, "Tell me where it hurts." How do you think that that starts a dialogue versus if you say what's going on or what's wrong?
Well, mostly what people say is not what's going on or what's wrong. Mostly people give advice. And advice is just the wrong way to go when it comes to mental health because you feel belittled. You feel like the other person, again, is judging you or is trying to be in a superior position. It just shuts you down. Whereas if you say to someone who's suffering, "Tell me where it hurts," it opens them up. They're able to express some of the pain and darkness that they've been living with, and it dissipates somewhat when it's exposed to the light. And you feel heard, you feel seen, you feel loved. But there is a word of caution that comes with that. It can be very difficult to listen to the darkness that can be expressed. So you have to really love someone and be willing to be patient and just listen, not recommend more blueberries or taking a walk or, you know.
I'm wondering what your other advice is as far as listening skills are concerned, because I think if you do hear someone hurting, it is tempting to want to jump in and just fix it, especially if it's a family member. It's like, "Oh, well, we'll just do this," or "How about we plan a vacation," or "You just need to get away," or "You need more sleep," or something. What listening skills can you help us with?
Well, unfortunately, it's something of a stereotype, but I experience that the most with men, that they want to jump in and fix it. I think they feel very bad that they can't make me feel better and control the situation. So listening involves letting go of control and trusting in the other person's desire to get better. This is not a volitional illness. Mental illness is very much not something you choose to have. So the patience and the empathy that's required of someone who loves a person with mental illness is a difficult thing to take on, but it can be so incredibly rewarding to listen and hear someone in pain get better on their own, because it always has to be on their own, from them, from their insides. But you may just save a life.
This goes back to your story being depicted on Modern Love. And I rewatched that this weekend. And oh my God, I think Anne Hathaway does just such a beautiful job of portraying what it's like to date with a mental illness. And you're not sure when or if you can tell that person what's wrong with you because there's such a stigma. So I'm wondering what dating advice you would have for somebody who is bipolar or depressed or struggling with some sort of mental illness where they're afraid to tell the person what's wrong with them, but at the same time, they kind of feel like they need to and they want to be upfront.
Well, I have to use my own personal experience for this because disclosure is different for everybody and it's always tricky. Whether to trust someone with your secrets or not in any area, not just mental health. So what I have done is mostly, well, unfortunately for me, because I wrote a book called Manic, everybody knows that I'm bipolar. So that cat's out of the bag. But for other people, I would recommend if the relationship is going to get sexual, if it's really deepening, you should tell the person that you're being treated, hopefully, for this condition. You know, you should be careful about your words and that you know your symptoms and your triggers and you've been dealing with it for a while. You know, just be reassuring. And the more matter of fact you are about it, the less drama is going to be created and you will feel better. They will feel better because very often people do know something is a little different about you. And it can be a great way to make a relationship deeper than it would have ever been otherwise.
You've said that the most powerful weapon you own is the phrase, it's depression talking.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. It's depression talking. Three little words can make a world of difference. It takes time to recognize what your particular illness looks like and feels like in your body. So it is something that takes some practice. You need to educate yourself, know your symptoms, know your triggers. But then you start to get this awareness of the illness as something almost separate from you. When I was a child, I was bipolar even as a child, when I called it the black beast. I thought of it as an entity almost like a twin, but not me. And I think it really helps to externalize the illness that way, because you can then say, all right, I know what depression looks like. I know what I'm going to go through for the next maybe 4 days or however long your episodes usually last. You can take your precautionary measures like calling your therapist, calling your doctor, getting your meds adjusted. Just knowing that it's depression that's come to call makes the visit so much easier.
What does it feel like for you to be in a manic state, and what does it feel like to be in a depressed state?
Well, I think I've described depression. For me, it really is about paralysis. It's hopelessness, desperation, feeling like I'm worth nothing and can't envision life ever being different. That's a particular hallmark of my depressions, is that it's gonna last forever. And that's where my loved ones come in and tell me, Terry, you know, your depressive episodes usually last 4 days. So just hang in there until Thursday and things will look different. And they're usually right. But mania is a whole different experience. Now there's a state just before mania that you can cycle into, and it's called hypomania. So it's like a lesser mania. And it's what I think most people think mania looks like. That was Anne Hathaway dancing in the parking lot and just mm-hmm. feeling on top of the world and attracting all these people to you. It's amazing. You become so charismatic and you make connections between ideas that you never would have made before. You really are at the top of your game, but that can escalate into a full-blown manic episode. And that's not always so pretty because your judgment goes out the window. You start engaging in risky behaviors like risky sexual behaviors and substance abuse and driving recklessly. It's just, you sound, I particularly sound like Minnie Mouse on speed when I'm manic. I just talk really fast and the ideas just keep pouring in. And sometimes I just have to almost scream to make the ideas stop. They just keep coming at me and coming at me. So it's not as pleasant an experience as people might think.
What are you doing right now to cope with it as far as medication or therapy or whatever it might be?
Well, I've thrown the whole bag of tricks at my illness because I don't want to suffer. I don't think there's anything noble in suffering. I don't think it makes me a better writer or a better person. I just don't believe in suffering. So I'm on a pretty hefty amount of medication. I bitch about it a lot, but I feel like I'm entitled to because I pay for it and I pay a lot of money for it and have a lot of side effects for it. But I'm also in therapy and I am sober, which was a shocking discovery to me that I had to stop drinking alcohol in order for the medications to work. So I've been sober for over 20 years now, and that took a lot of hard work. So I believe in that, in group therapy, but really sobriety is a missing ingredient in a lot of people's cocktail.
What advantages do you think there are to having a mental illness? And I don't mean this in any way that's trying to be offensive, because as I said, I have it myself. I think in some ways it's made me a more empathetic person. And I really hate it when people will act like they feel sorry for me because of it. So I'm curious what your experience has been.
I feel exactly the same way. I am actually in many ways grateful to be bipolar. There's a high correlation between creativity and bipolar disorder in particular, and intelligence. And you can't dismiss that empathy effect. It's amazing. It humbles you to suffer. It makes you realize you really are interdependent. You need other people. People have often asked me if there was a magic pill that you could take to get rid of your bipolar disorder, would you? And I have to tell you, I don't think I would. It made me who I am. And just knowing that I have my creativity to rely on to get me through the really dark times, I don't think I'd be as creative if I weren't bipolar. So I don't think I would take that pill.
How helpful has it been to write about your struggles? And would you advise that for other people?
Oh, it's incredible. Writing is, I should have added that earlier in my bag of tricks. Writing has been incredibly therapeutic for me. And it's funny, people often ask me, well, isn't it awful to write about all those dark moments and your suicide attempts and things like that? And it isn't, it's liberating. What happens is that I own the illness. It doesn't own me anymore. I control it. I choose what words I want to express it in. And that's the underlying meaning really of an owner's manual as well. Owning your illness by writing about it is one of the best therapies out there. So even if you're just tracking your moods in a journal, you'll be amazed at how much better you feel.
You've encouraged people who are struggling to tell their stories if they feel comfortable doing so. how can they figure out who would be a good person to tell, and how can they kind of come clean about it? I know you mentioned that you think most people have an idea if somebody's struggling with something that maybe they could pick it up.
I thought very successfully for all the years that I was practicing as an entertainment attorney, and that was a very high stress job, but it's funny. I've since Manic came out and was a bestseller, I heard from a lot of the people that I used to work with, and they said, we always knew there was something different about you. We just didn't know what. So I think that's very often the case. And as for knowing who you want to trust with your secrets, I think you need to look at mental illness as something very precious and valuable. Would I entrust this information to this person and let him have a part of me? It's a gut reaction a lot of times, except it's difficult when you're in a work situation. People are afraid to disclose. I still hear that a lot. I certainly was. I kept it secret. But there is, of course, the Americans with Disabilities Act that allows you to have accommodations for your illness if you disclose it to your employer. So you could maybe work from home part of the time, or just lessen the pressure that's on you, or have the time to go to therapy. So there's a lot of good reasons for disclosure. And my experience has been overwhelmingly positive, night and day. I thought I would be ostracized. I thought I would never work again. But instead, I've gotten thousands of messages of encouragement and praise and compassion, and mostly people thanking me for telling them that they're not alone. So what often happens is that I tell someone I have bipolar disorder and they say they have it too, or they have depression, as you just said, for example, or they have, a mother who suffered from anxiety. It's just amazing the number of people that are affected by mental illness.
And you've said you can spot a depressed person across the room. I found that fascinating. How so? What do you look for?
My goodness, I forgot I wrote that. I absolutely can. It's like it's a secret trick I have. You can see it it's like gravity is weighing harder on them than on most people. You see it I see it in myself, certainly. I've seen interviews with me when I'm depressed and my face is, has lost its animation, and my affect is sort of neutral, and it just looks weighed down. Again, there's that sense with depression of the burden that you're carrying. People often don't make eye contact. So it's just little things, but when you've been in a mental hospital a number of times, as I have, you certainly do get to know what the different illnesses look like.
As you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what is it? And you have so many things. What is it that nobody told you about bipolar or mental illness, and what it would mean for your life that you wish that they had years and years ago, because it would have saved you from some really tough times in your life?
I love that you asked that question, and I've listened to your podcast, and I love the answers people give. I think that my nobody told me answer would be, nobody told me that hiding a secret was worse than the secret itself. The hiding, the shame, the aloneness, the despair of not sharing yourself with other people is just so tremendous, and it's so dangerous. The suicide rate has skyrocketed in this country. And I think if I had known what I know now, I would have saved myself decades of misery and decades of being alone with my terrible, terrible fear and shame of anyone finding out. So really that, I think hiding a secret is worse than the secret itself is my answer.
God, that is so fabulous. I couldn't agree with you more. It takes away the stigma for everybody when you tell people, and I think you just feel like a weight's been lifted off of you. That's fabulous.
And what message would you have for someone who's struggling with a mental health issue right now? And what message would you have for someone who cares about someone who they feel is struggling?
I would let them know that I personally have great hope for the future right now, the future of mental illness, because I truly believe that given the psychological impact COVID-19 has had on America and the world, it's going to be a different landscape when we're out of this. I think there's going to be a much more awareness of and compassion for mental illness because of how many people have gone through suffering now themselves. So I would tell them not to despair, that we are not going to come out of these times unchanged. And I think that's a good thing.
And how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
My website is terrychaney.com. That's TerriChaney.com. And my email is on there, terry@terrychaney.com.
Terry, we thank you so much for joining us. This has been so insightful, and we really thank you for opening up about your story so that other people can open up about theirs.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for what you're doing. I think the idea is inspired.
Oh, thank you so much. Again, our guest has been Terry Chaney, and her new book is called Modern Madness in Owner's Manual. And again, you can visit her website by going to terrychaney.com.
I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.